Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for March the 2nd, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. How are you? And how is everybody out there? And we have lots of news and information for veterans and the families. So stay tuned. First, I want to remind everybody, this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments, and your questions. Call the show at any time at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. David, I know you got a lot of news for us out there, so I'm going to flip it back to you.
Well, thanks. Yeah, this past week, as well as this week and next week, are times of a lot of involvement, a lot of activity by national veteran groups in Washington, D.C. It's this time of year when major veteran organizations are testifying before the Senate and the House committees on veteran affairs. This past week, there were 3 days of hearings with many groups testifying and making their written presentations about their legislative ideas on veteran issues. And then this week, tomorrow actually, March the 3rd, there's another set of hearings with half a dozen groups. And that continues on Wednesday with more hearings. And then a week from now, a week from Wednesday, there'll be more hearings. Our guest next week will be John Rauter, who is with the press office for the American Legion National Headquarters. He'll be with us to talk about the American Legion's legislative goals, and that'll be next Monday. And the timing is good because 2 days later, March the 11th, the American Legion leadership will be making their presentation to the joint hearing of the Senate and the House Committees on Veteran Affairs. But there's a lot to talk about. Those of you that are interested in getting a sense of where Congress may be going in the next year with more legislation affecting veterans and their families, this is a good place to get more information. We're going to talk about tonight, and I'll also tell you where you can find out more details. And this is important because you want to get a sense of what Congress is thinking about, and to that you need to understand what these various veteran groups are talking about. And one thing that strikes me in reviewing the presentations from the last week is that, thank goodness, there are so many veteran groups, because if there were only one or two and there was too much power consolidated within just one or two major veteran groups, they would be stifling some good ideas and some criticism that needs to be heard about the VA. And that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. I'd like to talk about the presentations of some of the major groups that testified before Congress this past week. Before I start jumping into the details, let me first turn it over to Richard, get your thoughts, your impressions, anything that you'd like to focus on.
No, I kind of I was looking at a lot of this stuff, and unfortunately I got tied up with some stuff with the BVA today, and it kind of took me away from being able to kind of go in depth. So I'd rather have you address it,
okay,
and then we'll discuss it.
Okay, great. Well, like I say, this past week there were hearings by multiple veteran groups, including Disabled American Veterans, DAV, AMVETS, which is one of the other groups, major groups, the Wounded Warrior Project, also the National Association of State Directors of Veteran Affairs. As our listeners probably already know, that a lot of what we talk about on the show is the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, which decades ago was called the Veterans Administration, but it's now called the Department of Veterans Affairs, has been for quite a few years. But every state has its own version that's independent, that's a state agency. The state directors of Veterans Affairs form their own group called the National Association of State Directors of Veterans Affairs. And over the past several years, we've had a number of state directors on our show from North Carolina, from Alabama earlier this year, from Arizona, for instance. And we have invited others, and hopefully they will be in the next year. But that was another organization that testified. But let me jump to one that I found most refreshing. The two that I found most refreshing in their presentations this past week were the presentation of AMVETS and the Vietnam Veterans of America. And when I read these, I thought I could really, as a veteran myself, I could really relate, and having served in the military, I could really relate to the content of what they were saying, but also how they said it. They were communicating the way veterans tend to talk. As compared to, for instance, the Wounded Warrior Project, which was they had a mammoth presentation, written presentation. It was 28 pages plus attachments, but it was written like a medical journal article. It was just chock full of statistics. And I'm a real cynic about statistics because I think you can shape statistics that can appear to be impressive, but really they're somewhat meaningless. They need to be explained. And their presentation was just full of all sorts of statistics, how many hundreds of thousands of hours they've done this, how many thousands of people they've helped or they've done things for. But I'm going to, beyond that, what might appear to be superficial criticism, before tonight's over, I'm going to talk about their substantive, the real ideas that Wounded Warrior Project has and the shortcomings. I think they're really letting veterans down. But let me talk about the first two presentations that I found really the most exciting and refreshing to hear. And it starts with the AMVETS. It was the annual legislative presentation by Jan Brown, who's the national commander of AMVETS. And the thing that struck me immediately about the AMVETS presentation is they jumped right into attacking the entire VA mental health approach. You know, we talk about on the show every week about issues like post-traumatic stress, which is a big issue for combat veterans. Wars have been going on forever now. We talk about the problem of suicides of veterans. Every week we talk about the coaching and the care program. Well, what was refreshing about the AMVETS is they wanted to shake things up and say, Congress needs to start doing its job, real oversight of the VA, not just throw money at the VA and say, oh, we're giving you these, X billions of dollars, and therefore it must have a positive outcome. I'd like to read you some select portions of the AMVETS approach, because they're basically saying this, that the VA is ignoring evidence-based research, which suggests that what the VA has been doing for a long time on military-related PTSD isn't working for up to two-thirds of the patients, and that the VA therefore needs to look at new and novel treatments for post-traumatic stress. And of all the testimony and written presentation for this past week, this one really jumped out at me because, they all will pay lip service to, we got a high suicide rate among veterans, but this one was really getting to the crux of the problem. Let me quote from parts of it. This is from the AMVETS. It says, AMVETS has been astonished that significant research has been released without any consideration by Congress to review the research or ask those who are in charge of these research efforts to testify before Congress. The most glaring examples of this are the two outcome assessments ordered by Congress. As a result of the Clay Hunt SAVE Act, Congress required VA to provide an outside assessment of VA mental health programs. The first report was due to Congress in October 2018, and the second was due in October 2019. In both assessments, VA reported that veterans receiving general mental health treatment and PTSD specialty treatment resulted in no clinically significant outcomes as a result of their treatment. I continue to quote from the AMVETS presentation. Quote, just this month, the Journal of American Medical Association reported that the psychotherapy approaches considered by the Departments of Veteran Affairs and Defense to be frontline treatments for military-related PTSD don't work for up to two-thirds of patients. JAMA, which is the Journal of the American Medical Association, reported similar findings in 2015 and 2017, whereby they highlighted the need for new and novel treatments, unquote. Now, the AMVETS didn't stop there. They were critical as well, you know, of Congress, because Congress funds and sets the policy essentially for VA through legislation. So AMVETS continued to say, quote, the bottom line, our approach for veterans' mental health is failing, or as Dr. Edward Coffey recently testified, quote, what does it mean to be the best in an incredibly mediocre system, unquote. Congress continues to ignore the most critical fact in the room. Where we are spending the vast majority of resources fails most veterans most of the time. Most efforts by the White House, the VA, and Congress continue to focus on creating more, quote, access, unquote. Access or more significant funnels to treatments that do not work, will not, and have not achieved the outcomes we need, helping veterans live mentally healthy lives that are worth living, unquote. So that's pretty significant. And I compare this to the testimony and presentations of the other organizations this past week. And, you know, most of them will touch on the need for, as the AMVETS said, more access to care, need to hire more providers, need to talk about care out in the community when the VA is unable to provide it. But none of them talk about what are the kinds of treatments that are being used and are they actually working. Now, the VA doesn't, or the AMVETS presentation doesn't stop there. They go into a fair amount of detail with recommendations of what should be done, as well as, you know, how Congress can hold the VA to be more accountable for what's being done. So I think that was, hopefully Congress is listening and will actually incorporate those.
But that, you know, David, you just brought up something very interesting. Today you and I had a conference with a potential client, and I called, you know, I got you involved in it, and I'm sure you remember the woman who's receiving the IC and the whole issue about the pension.
Yeah, the dependency indemnity compensation for those.
Right.
Who
yeah. Anyway, yeah. So she's been very active, very proactive, and she's got a pretty good handle on her situation and everything. And she went to her congresswoman and laid it all out to the congresswoman. She said the congresswoman had no clue about what she was talking about. Had no idea that that was even a situation that affected veterans, affected their widows. So I just, you know, and she looked at me and she was astonished. She said, when I sat across from this congresswoman, and she just, you know, her jaw just dropped, like, you know, I'm sorry, I never heard of this before. And yet she claimed that she was very active with the VA and the veterans and the different groups up there in D.C. So, you know, it's just a comment about hoping that Congress is listening to AMVETS, because clearly, and I have read what you sent me today, and had some great stuff in there. And you just hope that you know, someone is listening, and they're going to start, you know, changing. You know, you gotta, if things aren't working, if it's broke, you gotta fix it.
Right.
You know what they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, guess what? If it's broken, you gotta fix it. And clearly MBETS is offering, some remedies that if Congress is listening, we could, adopt some of them.
Right. And, they put some of the blame on Congress for not calling these experts to testify. You know, Congress requires that the VA, do these studies, and then, they're not paying attention to what the studies are saying, really. And this is about the effectiveness of the treatment for military-related PTSD. And again, what they were saying was that, and this includes the Journal of the American Medical Association reporting that the psychotherapy treatments, considered by both the VA and Department of Defense as the frontline treatments aren't working for up to two-thirds of the patients. That's significant. So it's no wonder that veterans may, even if they go to the VA initially for care, if they don't feel like they're getting better, that they kind of drop out of the system, you know.
Well, you know, they throw so much medicine at them. You know, when I get a new case and one of the issues is mental, and I ask the veteran if he's currently going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist at the VA, and he says yes, and then I get a hold of those records, and I sit down with the veteran again, and I said, do you realize all the different medications that you're on for, you know, depression and anxiety? And they just look at me and go, well, not really. I just told them I'm supposed to take, you know, the following, and that's it. And some of this stuff, if you Google it, some of the stuff's identical stuff. I mean, they're just throwing stuff on top of stuff. And the veterans, you know, clearly the veteran isn't getting any better. Not that he can really get better, but in terms of coping, the veteran seems to have lost. And then the other thing that, and this is kind of very basic, and we get this when we talk to, the number of groups that do the peer-to-peer counseling. And that is so often what is just needed is someone to listen to the veteran, to talk about, let the veteran talk about what their experiences are. And I get this also, that when they go into these, into the VA and they sit down with a psychologist, it just seems to, and I'm paraphrasing what veterans say to me, and that is that they're not really interested in listening to me. You know, I have an appointment that they have to keep for me. They get me in and they get me out, and I walk out of there and, you know, I don't feel like I got anything out of that appointment. And it's like they're going through the motions because they have to. The appointment's made and they got to see the vet, but then they brush them off. If you need a refill of your medication, we'll refill it and see you in 3 months. So, yeah, it's not working. It's not working.
Yeah, and the AMVETs, I give them a lot of credit for stepping out there, and they're identifying something, and they're being very thorough in their analysis in this report. And our listeners, if you're interested, go to Veterans, the website's veterans.senate.gov, which is the committee for the U.S. Senate, Committee on Veteran Affairs, and you also go to veterans.house.gov for the House of Representatives, but at veterans.senate.gov, and look under the tab at the top for hearings, and that will then bring you to the hearings that were conducted this past week, that will be this week, and then next week. And you'll see that on the particular days, for instance, on February 26th, they had a Wounded Warrior, they had Vietnam Veterans of America, Military Order of the Purple Heart, they had AMVETS, and they had a couple other smaller groups make their presentation. You can download and read their presentations, and they vary in length from a dozen to three dozen pages.
David, did the report mention anything about medical marijuana?
I know that some of the reports did. I'd have to go back and look to see if AMVETS did in particular about perhaps the need to study its effectiveness, but to study, the pros and cons of it.
Because I know in dealing, you know, with a lot of the veterans I represent that one, the VA is not prescribing it for them, but they're taking it. and, you know, they have gone out on their own and just decided that they're going to, you know, take the medical marijuana, get a prescription for it and take it. And they've told me that it helps a lot more than what they were getting from the VA. Whether it's good or not, I have no idea. I'm not a doctor. I can't make that conclusion and form an opinion, but I can tell you what they tell me, and that is that it seems to be helping them. And it definitely it helps them a lot more than any of the drugs that the VA is prescribing.
Yeah.
So that'll be another interesting thing, whether or not, you know, they finally step up, and, you know, that obviously gets into a whole bunch of other issues, about the whole medical marijuana and the federal government. But, you know, that might be something down the road that they're going to, you know, provide.
Yeah, well, that's an issue. I think what AMVETS is suggesting, the VA, they're asking the Congress, to basically require higher levels of budget accountability for the VA. They throw a lot of money at the VA to help veterans, including mental health programs. And as AMVETS characterized it, it's like writing blank checks for the VA and putting faith that the VA's programs are actually going to work. They're suggesting, AMVETS is suggesting, that the Congress and congressional staff members, they take the time to do oversight of the programs, both programs that they have dismissed, and maybe that includes what you've described, but other approaches, that they need to look at, new treatments and see if they work and see if they work long term. I think it's important. I think it's a great thing that AMVETS has pointed this out more so than any of the other presentations this past week. Unlike many of the others, would simply say we need more access. We need more funding of the VA Mission Act. We need more funding of these other programs so the veterans can get access to care without asking the question, is the care they're getting effective? Now, at the same time, if they're sending veterans out into the civilian community where there, I believe there's going to be even less expertise for treating military and combat-related post-traumatic stress, that veterans are going to perhaps even get worse outcomes. They may get their care paid for by the VA out in the private sector, but it may not actually be better. But in any event, there's a lot to that issue, and AMVETS, I think, to their credit, is just trying to get some discussion on that. AMVETS has also brought up not just the timely access to quality health care, but also improving the medical care and the mental health care for women veterans. That's a top priority, it seems, for almost all the groups that testified this past week. As we know, that the percentage of veterans who are women have increased. They're at the highest level ever, and the VA has not kept up with both in terms of medical care, but also mental health care that addresses some of the trauma that the women have experienced, particularly an issue we've talked about on this show over the last several years, which is military sexual trauma, sexual assaults, rapes that have occurred in the military and that need to be, that there are veterans that suffer as a result of that, and the VA needs to improve their program. So that's another issue. And AMVETS has endorsed very specific bills for improving medical care for women veterans, in addition to just the overall issue of more timely access to care, which has been an ongoing issue. So AMVETS, check out their presentation. Their national commander, Jan Brown, testified on the 26th, and it's well written, it's clear, it's right to the point, and it's specific. It just doesn't throw a bunch of statistics at you, try to impress you about, you know, what AmVets is doing. It has a lot of thought behind it. Another one that I was really impressed
I was going to ask about the Wounded Warrior one. You know,
I'm going to get to them in a minute. Yeah, Wounded Warrior.
They've had a lot of controversy over the years.
Well, I don't know who wrote their written presentation. The statement presented by Wounded Warrior Project was by Lieutenant General retired Michael Linnington, who's the Chief Executive Officer on the Wounded Warrior Project's the year 2020 legislative priorities, as they described it. And you can also download this and the others that I described from veterans.senate.gov. But I don't know who actually wrote and put together their package, but it's written in almost like a medical journal is written, which is not necessarily really user friendly. Has just a ton of statistics as if it's trying to impress everyone about what the Wounded Warrior Project has done, and all these percentages from the so-called 2019 annual Warrior Survey. And you don't know how meaningful these or how correct, or on the other hand, potentially misleading these statistics are, because it's not clear on who they actually surveyed for this. If they just surveyed the people that they call Wounded Warrior alumni, which I think is kind of an odd term, but that's a term they use to describe people that have been through Wounded Warrior Project programs, alumni. But in any event, check theirs out. They do have a list of recommendations. They kind of start with an executive summary with their priorities. Their priority issues include mental health and suicide prevention, which most of the groups talk about. They talk about toxic exposure, which some of the groups talk about. They talk about improving the care, particularly military sexual trauma treatment for women veterans. They talk about brain health, because traumatic brain injury has been a big issue for the Iraq war veterans, particularly in Afghanistan too. And then they talk about the caregiver program, which is something we've occasionally talked about in this program. We have family members taking care of the permanently disabled or housebound veterans. And then their sixth priority is employment and educational efforts for veterans. But let me give you an example of what I found especially, I'm going to be very direct, lame about the Wounded Warrior Project's presentation. And I'm going to get back to what I was going to talk about a minute ago about the Vietnam veterans, which was a much, I think, stronger presentation. But let's talk about toxic exposure. Rick, you know, we've had guests on this show about the open-air burn pits. We've had guests going back to 2017, our first year on the air, where we had Greg Lovett, who directed that film, you know, Delayed and I Hope You Die, How American Poisoned the Soldiers. And since then, we've had Lauren Price of Veteran Warriors on several times talking about this. Well, I think it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know, both in terms of the science, but also the realities of the VA. And a veteran is able filing a disability claim and getting medical care for that disability, is it sure makes things easier if the VA has conceded that certain veterans have been exposed to these toxics. And furthermore, going a step further and saying that if you develop one of these illnesses or cancers that's on this list, and you are stationed in an area where you're exposed to these toxic substances, that the VA will presume the connection, the nexus, the medical connection between your exposure and your illness and your cancer, and therefore do two things: provide necessary medical care, and then number two, provide disability compensation. Well, this is what I found really sad and lame about the Wounded Warrior Project's recommendations to Congress on the toxic exposure. This is their recommendation. The first one is create a new priority group within the VA health system to deliver treatment for toxic exposure illnesses. They just want to create a new priority group. In other words, as a lot of veterans know, that just because you're a veteran doesn't necessarily mean you get VA health care. The VA healthcare system has priority groups. Yeah, it's okay. So that makes some sense. Create a new priority group just for toxic exposed veterans. But it leaves it up to, a lot of further decisions to decide who actually then is in that group. What toxic exposure? How does someone prove that they were exposed and that they were affected by it? But that's one of the recommendations. The second one, and this is where, when we've talked about in the show and some of our guests have criticized, the VA just wants to study this to death. This is where the Wounded Warrior Project really falls into that trap of let's just study these issues to death. And you know what's going to happen. I mean, nothing's ever going to happen. So their second and third and their fourth recommendations. They only had four recommendations. The first one was let's create a new priority group to provide health assistance. But the next three are all on this let's study it further. So their second recommendation, and I'll read it to you. This is a quote. Develop a platform where VA and Department of Defense can analyze, track, and update the individual longitudinal exposure record. And the abbreviation of that is ILER, I-L-E-R. And compare this data to VA records to identify, quote, high-risk, unquote, cohorts. You know, when would they start calling veterans cohorts, by the way? Okay, which is a term maybe you hear in the medical arena to describe, groups of people. All right, but this is an example of what I was mentioning earlier. This started to sound like a medical journal. The third recommendation is, quote, ensure that veterans have access to the exposure records from ILER to help with identification and treatment of toxic exposure-related illnesses. And their final recommendation is include a toxic exposure-related questionnaire during VA primary care visits to track possible illnesses. So that's it. They're talking about establishing, a platform, meaning a computer program, where the VA and DOD can track kind of the long-term exposure record. Okay, yeah, maybe that's necessary for some, if you're just planning on studying this thing to death. But nowhere does Wounded Warrior Project say, hey, Congress, why don't you pass a statute that says veterans that have been in these areas, we will presume that they were exposed to toxic substances. Number one, because we know these burn pits were being used. And number two, we know all the stuff that was being burned in there, which is everything under the sun. And we know from EPA studies and OSHA studies and every other study for the last 40 years in the United States that these exposures can cause cancer. They don't talk about those things, and even worse, they don't talk about let's create a presumptive list. As I said earlier, that if a veteran comes down with one of these cancers or illnesses, they will be presumed. So it makes it much easier on the veteran. The veteran doesn't have to go out and find their own medical expert and try to convince the VA. So this is where the Wounded Warrior presentation was completely weak. It's not at all taking an aggressive approach for veterans. It's just lame. And I was really disappointed considering, the length of this presentation, very detailed, full of all sorts of gee whiz statistics about all the great things that the Wounded Warrior Project is doing and their own annual warrior survey, whatever that is, anyway, so I know I'm being very critical, but I think their organization deserves this criticism because if they're even paying attention to what other veteran groups are saying, they know that they're not staking out. They're leading way in the, by following the weakest ideas. Even the VA would probably be willing to do more than just what they're suggesting at this point. So your thoughts, Rick, before I
well,
go
I,
on.
Well, I've just never been, your insight's really good. And I've just never been a big fan of Wounded Warriors. You hear about them all the time. And I think they've got quite a marketing budget. But my personal feeling is that it's another one of those nonprofits that, is top heavy in administrative costs and advertising and marketing, and when it gets right down to it, you know, what are the dollars that they're getting, and how is that really getting out to the veterans, which is what this is all about, is to take care of our veterans. But they do a good job marketing, because I hear all the time people, you know, come to me and they say, well, you know, what can I do to help vets? And they throw out to me, they go, you know, how about if I donate to Wounded Warriors? And I'm like, well, hang on. I said, quite frankly, I'd rather see you, if you're in a restaurant some night and you see a veteran having dinner with his wife, just go over there and thank him for his service and pick up his dinner tab. I think that's probably more effective than anything. But, so I'm just not a big Wounded Warrior fan. And obviously this, you know, your criticism of their presentation is just more evidence to, the negativity about the organization.
Yeah. And in a moment, to give you some context of my criticism, I'm going to talk about the Vietnam Veterans of America, their presentation. And, you know, what I applaud Vietnam Veterans of America for is that even though, as their name suggests, they're an organization of Vietnam veterans, they're going out there, you know, and taking aggressive positions for veterans of other generations, including on the toxic exposure issues. And it's because they know what their generation went through on Agent Orange, and they're not willing to just sit back and watch it happen to another generation. I'll talk about their presentation in a minute. But the other thing that I found interesting, this was in the Wounded Warrior Project's presentation, is Wounded Warrior Project is taking credit for helping to spearhead, as it says, the formation of a coalition to address these toxic exposure issues. And the coalition is called, the acronym is TEAM. You know, if you're in the military, you know you've got to have an acronym for everything. Well, the TEAM coalition stands for Toxic Exposure in the American Military. That's what TEAM stands for. And this coalition, its purpose is to raise public awareness and investigate the harmful effects of toxic exposures. Well, that already is they raise public awareness. What they need to do is raise congressional awareness and do far more than simply investigate the harmful effects. That just means let's study it for years, and that turns into decades, et cetera. But one thing I did note in their presentation, they list 22 organizations that are participating in this coalition, this TEAM coalition, and they include some of the following: AMVETS, who I already talked about, Burn Pits 360, California Communities Against Toxics, the Ceasefire Campaign, the Dixon Center for Military and Veteran Services, the Enlisted Association of the National Guard of the United States, Hunter 7, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, who are testifying before Congress tomorrow, by the way, Military Officers Association of America, MOA, Military Veterans Advocacy, that we know quite well. Rick, you and I went to one of their seminars in February, and John Wells has been our guest several times on the show. The National Veterans Legal Services Program, that I hold in high regard. They're the authors of the Veteran Benefit Manual. Paralyzed Veterans of America, Task Force Dagger Foundation, the American Legion, the Enlisted Association, Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, TAPS, Veteran Warriors, who, you know, Lauren Price has been on our show, Veterans and Families for Exposure Awareness, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Vets First, Vietnam Veterans America, and Wounded Warrior Project. So those are all members of this coalition. You think, well, if all these coalition members are trying to work on the same goals, why haven't they gotten together and presented a more united front about what they want Congress to do? Because it's certainly not reflected in the very lame recommendations by Wounded Warrior Project. Now, to go on to a different perspective on that same issue, is the presentation by John Rowan, who is the national president of the Vietnam Veterans of America. And we all know the Vietnam veterans have fought VA for decades on the exposure to Agent Orange. And they're still pushing some of the Agent Orange issues that still need to be fought. But at the same time, they're also taking some leadership on these toxic exposure issues. And part of their presentation talks about that. And I'll just quote from some of their criticism of the VA. Because, like AMVETS, they're not really impressed with what the VA has been doing, and I don't think they're terribly impressed with what Congress has not been doing in providing enough oversight. Here's a quote from the Vietnam Veterans presentation. Quote, now that it has been determined that it is in fact feasible to conduct follow-up epidemiological studies on the descendants of veterans who were exposed to toxic substances while in uniform, the VA has, under the law, the next move. But thus far, they haven't moved with any sense of urgency. Rather than establishing the commission called for in the law, the secretary has only recently pulled together a sort of ad hoc committee from various government departments. To say we're less than thrilled would be an understatement. So it's time for you and Congress to exercise the oversight for which you have statutory responsibility. Call the VA secretary to appear at a VA hearing. Ask him to explain under oath why his department has been lollygagging and what he will do to get them back on track to execute the provisions of this act.
I like that word.
Lollygag. Yeah, that's a yeah. Great word.
I like that word.
And he goes on. He goes, and let us be clear. Since Vietnam, our military, yet again, to protect the men and women in uniform from the harmful effects of the toxicants to which they were exposed by the uncontrolled burning in burn pits, some nearly as large as 20 acres in Iraq and Afghanistan, of a melange of junked and jettisoned objects, medical and human waste, amputated body parts, animal carcasses, chemicals, paints, metal aluminum cans, munitions, and other unexploded ordnances, batteries, petroleum and lubricant products, plastics, tires, rubber, wood, discarded food, with jet fuel JP-8 used as an accelerant. Just had to have the burn pits, Commander stressed as the wars went on and on. They go on, though, Vietnam veterans, they don't overlook the veterans of Desert Shield and Desert Storm, which sometimes get overlooked. Vietnam Veterans of America talk about their exposures, their likely exposure to a variety of environmental and chemical hazards that include the vaccinations they were given before they deployed for anthrax and other diseases. Their exposure to oil well fires. We know that during that war, Iraq, when soon into the war, Iraq set all their oil fields on fire. Also, exposure of chemical and biological weapons, including sarin, from the demolition of an ammunition storage depot at Kamisia. Depleted uranium, chemical agent resistant coating used in the paint on military vehicles. Pesticides, PB, a pretreatment drug to protect against nerve agent, and various solvents like benzene, ethylene glycol, methyl ethyl ketone, the long list of chemical names that these veterans were exposed to, and they come home and they encounter illnesses which they can't explain. The treatments aren't making them better, and then when they file for disability compensation, most are treated, according to the Vietnam Veterans of America, quote, most were treated as if they were trying to get over on the government, as the VA more often than not put up roadblocks to veterans suffering from illness. It was deja vu all over again, and this is wrong. Vietnam Veterans of America presentation does address the Agent Orange issue further, but also talks about the toxic exposure at a number of stateside, or CONUS, Continental United States, installations, including Fort McClellan, Alabama, Fort Chaffee in Arkansas. The list goes on. Fort Detrick and Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland, the Dugway Proving Ground in Utah, the Marine Base at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, the former Marine Base at El Toro, California, and Fort Greeley in Alaska. The Vietnam Veterans of America is telling Congress that the VA secretary must be required, as existing law already requires, to enter into an agreement with a reputable research entity that would impanel distinguished scientists, researchers, etc., to research the literature, hold public hearings, discuss and debate their findings, and produce biannual updates on veterans with toxic exposure. This is important. So they have specific recommendations on how to improve the registries that are used to gather information. There's a lot of problems with the current registry, as our past guest, Lauren Price, has discussed. So they have some very specific ideas on that. But importantly, as I mentioned earlier, that the Vietnam Veterans of America recommend legislation that would establish a presumption of service connection for the purpose of veterans' disability and survivor benefit. You know, now, which illnesses will be on this list? They suggest, any illness that the secretary determines warrants the presumption because of a positive association with exposure to a toxicant. And the question then, though, is, how much faith are you going to put in the VA secretary? We know how the VA can drag its heels for years and even decades on that issue. And that's why I think if you really wanted to be aggressive on this issue, they need to push Congress to do what they did in the Camp Lejeune contaminated water issue on the health side. You may recall Camp Lejeune, the Janie Ensminger Act was done in 2012, I believe, was the year. And Congress itself, by legislation, by statutes, came up with a list, I think there were 15 or so illnesses and cancers, that if a veteran or family member was exposed to those, they would be entitled to VA health care. It wasn't the presumptive on disability compensation. That came later, and this is where they took a separate approach. They gave the power to the VA secretary, the VA, to come up with regulations on that list. And when they did a few years later, it was a much shorter list, and it took longer, and it was a shorter list. Well, I think Congress has the power that they could create a list by statute. But what does it mean? It means more work. They got to call these experts. They have to hold hearings. They have to debate this, and they have to go on the record and vote, rather than simply punting over to the VA secretary, the VA bureaucracy, to take what will be, we know, years and years to do that. So I applaud the Vietnam Veterans of America for their more aggressive approach than Wounded Warriors Project on the toxic issue, but I think they could go even further.
So for all of you that are listening out there, and David's done a great job of summarizing the different groups that testified today and presented their cases
last week.
But what we all need to do now is we need to go out and vote for our representative who's actually going to go to Washington and give a damn. Because, unfortunately, that's not what is happening today. These groups made some great presentations, offered some great advice, input based upon their own experiences as veterans, as the way the VA has behaved over the last couple of decades, and they're putting some great stuff in front of Congress to act. And the current, my opinion, the current group of Congress people are not going to step up and do what they're supposed to do. So we need to go out and elect those individuals who will give a damn when it comes to veterans issues. Anybody, but I just find that, so many of these congressmen and senators, they, come Memorial Day and Veterans Day, when July 4th, they're in the front of all the parades, waving their flags, talking about how much they love and support our veterans. But when they get to D.C., everything kind of, changes, and they don't focus on these issues. And they got to start focusing on these issues because these are real, real issues that affect a lot of people.
Yeah.
So thanks, David, for all of that information.
Yeah, well, let me just summarize, too, because the hearings aren't over yet. Again, starting tomorrow and Wednesday of this week, and then a week from Wednesday, there are more hearings tomorrow. And you can either watch these online, go to veterans.senate.gov, or you can download their written presentations. But some of the organizations tomorrow include Paralyzed Veterans of America, Gold Star Wives, who were big on the issue we've talked about briefly, and that you and I talked about earlier today, Rick, which is the dependency indemnity and survivor benefit plan offset issue, but also increasing the amount of payment for dependency indemnity compensation. Gold Star Wives will be making their presentation. Military Officers Association of America, Fleet Reserve Association, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and the American Ex-POW Association. They will be making their presentations, and then on March 4th, this Wednesday, it'll be the VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, which is one of the biggest organizations. And then next week, on the 11th, will be the American Legion, and our guest next Monday will be John Rotter, who was with the their press office. So there's a lot of stuff out there, and you know, I view these presentations, each their own piece of the puzzle, on kind of a state of the union for veteran issues. You know, these veterans, some of these organizations have their own particular area of focus. Some of them have a broader picture and cover more issues. Some are more aggressive for veterans than others. Some are more specific when they're talking about specific bills before the House and the Senate. So there's a lot there. It's almost overwhelming in terms of the volume, but it's out there, and you can get informed. So we're about reaching the close of our show. Rick, why don't we make our weekly reminder about an important program, Coaching Into Care.
Yeah, that is a very important program, and every week we highlight that for the obvious reasons that it is such an important program. Again, David, I want to thank you for the information that you provided our listeners tonight.
Well, there's a lot of it. It can be overwhelming, just the sheer volume, but Congress is faced with this stuff, and now the question will be, what will they, you know, they listen to dozens of veteran groups, end of February, beginning of March. What are they going to do the rest of the year?
Exactly.
Which of these many bills are they going to say? Because let's say only a half a dozen bills get acted on. What's going to be the priority of these committees? Because if it can't get through the committee, it's not going to get voted on the floor.
No.
Obviously. So the power is in the committee, one of the groups, and I forget which one, made a comment that unlike in the past, it seems like that the House Veterans Affairs Committee, this Congress, has lost some of its bipartisanship. That's become more splintered and politicized, which is unfortunate.
Well, that would
what
be
it means is less is going to get done. But anyway, let's go to Coaching Into Care. Where you need
Coaching
to...
Into Care, this program is a reminder to our veterans and their families. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Sorry about that. It helps, returning home can be a tough adjustment. Loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, that number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind our listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line. Please call that number at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call that number at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Well, it's time to go. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BPS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Early Law Group. I'd also like to thank our producer at BPS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Hope you'll tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on BBSRadio.com Station 1 for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you'll have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.